Dexter Gordon and Johnny Griffin, both teaming up on this number called Blues Up and Down. This was performed live at Carnegie Hall in 1976. Both Gordon and Griffin are on tenor sax, George Cables on piano, Rufus Reed on bass, and Eddie Gladden on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we pick up from where we left off with each other just yesterday. Well, we see that there have been some pretty interesting developments. So let's start looking at some of those. Not too many, but enough to keep us occupied. There's a major development in the alleged sex assault case against Joe Biden, if it ever comes to fruition. The Democratic Party appears to be very silent about it, but new evidence has surfaced in the case of Tara Reid, a former staffer on the staff of Biden when he was a U.S. senator, and she had complained, she had told people she knew, she told her mother, she told a neighbor, she told other people about what had happened to her, and that was back in 1993, but nothing happened. It went nowhere. And so Tara Reid has decided that she's not going to remain quiet about it, and she's pursuing justice in the case. Well, if you think she's quiet, Biden is exceedingly quiet. He's not saying anything. And that might be a good tactic, because the minute he speaks, it means that he has engaged in the battle. And the best strategy, I guess, he thinks, is to say nothing until hard evidence surfaces, and then it's up to the lawyers to duke it out. So that's where that is. The question now is, though, that with this coming up, and as you know, before this happened, we had, the murmurings, and then the full-out question about whether Biden, back in 1993, did commit sexual assault against Tara Reid. And now that's more and more substance is being added to the claim. It seems to send a signal that the authorities are looking to do something about the case. Now, it may not be a wholehearted effort, but they have no way of explaining why this case has lingered on and gone nowhere since 1993. Something must be done. Unfortunately, it coincides with one of the most contentious presidential elections we have had in a long time, and Biden is the presumptive Democratic candidate, which means that if anything substantive were to happen, it would signal the intention by the authorities to literally put Biden under the gun. That might possibly kill his campaign. But then again, the question is, which is greater? The quest for justice, the fact that justice was not done. I'm not suggesting that he's guilty, we don't know. But we do know that it is unusual, most unusual, that an alleged crime, and it is a serious crime, committed in 1993 has gone nowhere up until now. How's that explained? What happened? It's most unusual. And in the meantime, we see the forces gathering around Biden, especially women, saying that they believe in Joe Biden. They believe him. The inference directly meaning that they don't believe her. And yet, it is not the issue. It's not an issue whether you believe this or you believe that. The issue is, why has this case lingered on without any movement toward prosecution since 1993? That's the issue. That's the issue. You put 12 people in a box, you swear them in, and the evidence will be presented, and the jury will decide. That's the rule that we have. That's how a trial is done. It is not up to people to decide whether they believe Biden or they don't believe Biden. Who cares what you believe? First of all, you have nothing to do with the case. And secondly, you, by doing this, you actually are attempting to subvert justice. You're not helping. Let the court proceed. Let justice proceed according to the law. And let's get a couple of questions answered. Not only did this crime occur, and it will be proven in the court, but also, how is it that this alleged crime managed to sit without any action, managed to escape attention since 1993? That's a very important question. Was this a cover-up or an intended cover-up? Was undue influence brought to bear on this case so that Joe Biden, never mind the young lady in question, Tara Reid, Joe Biden will not be embarrassed and humiliated. So to save his face, they just scuttled the prosecution of the case. It's a very major thing. And people are acting as it's no big deal. And we see more and more women now joining the bandwagon, basically selling their opinion about what they believe. Who cares what you believe? You're not connected to this case. You are not involved in this case. You're not a lawyer, so shut up and not be accused of prejudicing potential jurors and corrupting the case. The only people that matter here would be a panel of jurors. What do they believe? That's important. Other people, you're not important. Not in this case. We don't want to hear from you. We don't care what your opinion is. And all the more, I resent the idea, especially now that we have, it's a very costly, in many ways, a very costly campaign. We have Biden, who has waited with bated breath, and you know that doesn't smell good. Bated breath. All these years, he played second fiddle to Barack Obama. He's in his 70s now. If he doesn't get a chance now, he won't ever get it. And the determination by the Democratic Party establishment is he deserves his shot. They organized it, and we talked about this when it was happening. They've organized a and endgame here. One, to produce Biden as a presumptive presidential candidate. And lo and behold, it has happened. But two, we have Donald Trump, on the other hand, not the most pristine character, but with a lot of pull. He's a very serious contender, no matter what you think of him. And there's a lot to think of him. But it's a do or die kind of thing. It must happen as the Democrats see it. It has to happen. And Biden has got to win. They pulled him through the first part. They got him through. And now this happens. And people are acting like this young woman has caused it. And that's not the right attitude, nor is it accurate. She filed her concerns in 1993. She's been waiting for justice since 1993. And the impediments to justice have existed since 1993. Now in this presidential election year, it is do or die time. And whatever they have to do to win or to have their candidate win, the Democrats will do, because it's the same attitude on the other side. Whatever Trump has to do to win, he will do. So this leaves us, members of the public, in a very interesting position. Just what the hell is happening here? What's happening to justice? What's happening to the vision of presidential candidates being above suspicion? No, none of that seems to be applying here. And the importance of this case, the significance of this case, if it is going to come to fruition, is that we will learn how conspiratorial in nature politics really is. If you are plugged into the right system meaning a system designed specifically to let you win, to make you win, to help you win, if you're plugged into that, it will happen. If you're not, you are climbing the steepest hill of your life. So that's a very interesting development. We'll see how it is treated. We'll see how the Democratic Party in particular, and even the Republican Party, how they react to it. Well, of course, the Republican Party is thrilled that this pristine character, Mr. Biden, Mr. Untouchable, Mr. Righteous, suddenly finds himself in the grasp of a most unfortunate development that speaks directly to his character, directly to the flip side of that very righteous coin that he presents. I'm intrigued by it. But I'm warning people at the same time to watch the speed at which they'll round up a whole bunch of women, because they'll try to make this a feminist issue, which it's not. It's not a feminist issue, except in the sense that here's a woman who alleges that this man has done some grievous offenses against her. And she's entitled to recourse in a court of law. I mean, this is not unusual. This is not being special or being especially mean. This is just the course that things run. And we see the hypocrisy suddenly It is the woman here, and this is on the part of other women who are joining in and saying, I believe Joe Biden, without knowing a damn thing about this case. They're now forming a kind of a coterie among themselves. Women for Biden. No, the question is, Biden was after this woman as a discharged. Let's have a trial. That's what everybody should be clamoring for. Let's have a trial and see how it goes. Is this woman lying? Is she making things up? Or is Biden lying? And is Biden really a sexual predator? Now, that is what is so important. It's ironic because, as you know, Donald Trump has been accused of himself being a sexual predator. And he pulled through. That's the formula. When they have selected a candidate who will represent the party, the candidate must prevail. So the party apparatus organizes all kinds of ways to assure that the candidate prevails. We have an alleged sexual predator in the White House right now. He didn't come to trial. And they're hoping the Democrats, well, they have the flip side of the coin to deal with. And they are following the roadmap. And I'm saying no. What people should do is insist that justice become a predictable thing, that women and men and all people who are grievously harmed, no matter by whom, can feel confident of protection under the law. So at some point soon, if Biden doesn't address it, somebody in the Democratic Party ought to address it, because they will start organizing a so-called political base. Do you feel comfortable supporting an alleged sexual predator? Do you feel comfortable about supporting a system that covered us up since 1993 and denied justice? Justice meaning the airing of the case in a court of law and let the chips fall where they may. If it turns out this was all made up, we'll know. If it turns out that these things were in fact true, we will also know. But this business of proceeding as if nothing is happening, we've got to stop it. We cannot allow the party or the apparatus of the party to create an illusion that nothing is happening, or that some people just have it in for Joe Biden and look at what they're doing. They're trying to destroy his character. None of which is true. And in fact, even if you thought that, you should have enough faith in the criminal justice system that a man of good character could survive even that. There's no need to be afraid. If he indeed is a man of good character, there's no reason to get all befuddled about it. So that's the latest development here, apart from the fact that they're rounding up, the party that is rounding up more and more women to attest to Biden's good character, and irrespective of the facts, they're pledging that they support Biden. Is that not illogical? Here are women fighting stereotypes, creating their own stereotypes as women who don't need to know. They don't need to know the truth. They just are told things, or they feel things and make these things true because they feel them. Come on, grow up already. The other thing I wanted to talk about, plant in your ear for when we open up for exchange of views, is about the Bernie Sanders Green Party coalition. The movement, it seems, is all but dead. Of course, there may be a little sign of life here and a sign of life there, but in real terms, in realistic terms, it seems dead. Sanders, as you know, has bowed out of the race. He has given it up and walked away. But I'm saying the remains of this movement should not just be left out to rot. And people are doing a great disservice to this movement that had such an auspicious beginning and such a very encouraging and optimistic track record. It should not allow the movement to just rot away. If this movement is no longer to exist, it should be given a decent burial. At the very least, it deserves that. Close the books and do it right. Profess publicly that you gave it your best shot. It didn't work. And we are now regrouping and thinking of the next move. But don't just say nothing and leave everything frazzled. It really irritates me that people do that. Cut clean. If the idea is that the movement is no longer to exist, it has no chance of existing as envisioned, you give it a decent burial. What's wrong with that? And you go someplace quiet and you ponder what your next move will be. That's what you ought to do. But this is messy and nothing good will come of it. And in this matter, Sanders bears some responsibility. You don't just walk away from a movement because you lost. How you end things is very important. You have to follow protocols here. Why? Because even if you don't want to continue, there may be others who could see themselves being involved at that level. But the party or the movement itself has to do some very official things to demonstrate that it's all grown up, that they're not kids, that they understand the importance of doing things right. Because if you have a ragged ending, what you're saying is for people who might be very good candidates in the future, this is how we behave. We will leave you in the sand to rot if things go badly. And in politics, things go badly all the time. But end it, please, on a more professional note, a more responsible note, to indicate that you're grown people. And you understand how to bring closure to something, even if it is painful. But you close it out nicely. You recite the things that you have achieved. You remind people of the great vision that you had. You came close, but not close enough. But you leave room, at least, to predict that maybe the next time is the time. And until that time, we will use whatever time we have in between to plot and to plan and to reconfigure and to resurrect ourselves. But when you walk away, you disgrace your own movement. And you give people permission to criticize you and walk away too. Why don't they understand these basic things, these basic concepts? Okay, so you lost, or you threw in the towel, but you're also throwing away your dignity. You're throwing away all these high ideals that you had espoused. You're showing people, really, you talked one thing, but then you did something else. Look how you treat your own party. This vision that came out of a national concern, national organization, shared ideas and beliefs. You just left it out there to rot. Maybe you don't deserve any further assistance and support. Maybe that's what your behavior is endorsing. We're done, and we just don't care what happens next. Well, that's what I have to say about that. I know I'm going to get a tongue lashing, but I'm ready. I ain't running anywhere. 888-874-4888. After this break, we come back and talk. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and this is when you get to talk and you put forward your own ideas and opinions at 888-874-4888. I just did something stupid here. I pressed a button and things have disappeared. So give me 1 second as you call in. I'll be with you momentarily until I get back my bearings, and those things that have disappeared will reappear, hopefully, and we can proceed. But you're understanding, I hope, what my point is. I'm not trying to beat up anybody. I'm saying, though, that you're grown people, supposedly experienced in the business of politics. And you ought to know by now how to behave. You ought to know by now how to conduct yourselves. Leaving this thing out here to fester and rot, and nobody seems to care to put a nice finish to the finish, it just leaves open for criticism, total criticism. Patricia, you're on the air from New York.
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I hope all is well.
Thank you, Patricia. Same hope for you, too, that you are well.
So I want to start with Stacey Abrams first, and I want to start by sharing something that was actually reported. So, as you know, every year the march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge is commemorated. So this year, prior to the beginning of the march, there was a service that was held in a local church in Atlanta. That was held in a local church, and Reverend Sharpton was seated between Joe Biden and Stacey Abrams. He said, "Welcome." His greeting was, "Welcome to the next Vice President. Welcome, Mr. Vice President." No, he didn't say welcome, Mr. He said, "Welcome, Vice President." And Joe Biden said, "I don't think you're talking to me." And he turned to Stacey Abrams and he said, "No, I wasn't." So yesterday you talked about the fact that Stacey Abrams has reached out and indicated that she is available, if called, to be on the ticket. And I think that exchange between she and Reverend Sharpton and Joe Biden illustrates what people do, the alignment that people do when they, in quest of a power that they perceive that individuals have, of which they can take advantage. You know, that old saying that you're known by the company you keep, see my friend, see me, whatever, however you characterize it. Stacey Abrams understands that her future, at least she believes her future, rests with the Democratic Party and those individuals who she has identified as being the power brokers in the Democratic Party, that her future depends on aligning with them. If you look at all the women from Amy Klobuchar, Nancy Pelosi, everybody is making pronouncements. I believe in Biden's account. I am satisfied with what he has said. Every female is going to be marched out to condone or to support or to agree or whatever adjective you want to use, because in the same way that they threw down for Hillary Clinton, they're going to throw down for Joe Biden. And end of story. Enough said. Full stop. So Stacey Abrams is playing the book the way the book is written. And that's the end of the story. But
well, she's gone beyond what the book is saying or has been saying for all these years. If you want to be on the, if you want to get the number two spot on the ticket, the last thing you want to do is to sandbag people and call a news conference and announce you are very much interested in this, you have all the qualifications, you're interested in this spot, and you are ready to serve. Okay. That could be read as a direct threat to Biden. But here's the thing. They talk, as Abrams just did, but what's your backup? I know you could point to Sharpton, possibly Jim Clyburn, who gave Biden a second chance at political life. But it's tacky and it's wrong. You don't do that. Not in public. You don't sandbag the person that you hope to be working for as the number two person on the ticket. You call meetings. We shouldn't even know what's on your mind. These are the kinds of confidential issues that you talk about behind closed doors. You don't first announce, yes, I'm interested, I'm qualified, and I'll be a great vice president. Meaning, if you know what's good for you, you'd give me the spot. That's extortion. openly.
But you, Therese, that's why I started with the Sharpton interchange. He has already anointed her, and Biden sat next to him and said, okay. She was already anointed.
Well, it's a matter of everybody lying to each other. Look, no matter what Sharpton does, no matter how powerful he might be and how influential he might be, the black vote by itself means nothing in the scheme of things. It's just symbolic at this point. Biden also has substantial black support. People forget that. And then there will be the question of, is this fracturing, or will this be fracturing the party on the basis of race? Will she be guilty, and her supporters like Sharpton and even anybody else who is deemed to be influential? Is this the time to publicly engage in this kind of activity, these kinds of tactics? Wrong move. Wrong move. You don't start off by putting Biden on the spot. If the intention is you want to be on his team, he doesn't want to be on your team. You want to be on his team. You don't come out with a cudgel, and you don't imply threats that you have the backup to get what you want. That's very brazen behavior. That's thuggish behavior, as far as I'm concerned. You're not being strong, you're being thuggish. And you basically threw out the window from the very beginning any effort at diplomatic talks. That's how it's done. You go someplace quiet, you could make noise in the room, but nobody would know. You don't put your agenda out in the media and basically have it stand as a direct challenge to Biden. If he is interested in women on the ballot, here stands a black woman that we support. And no. Now you're asking for a different kind of fight. She's wrong. And they are wrong to have gone about it this way. And the issue is, it's not like you have backup. You're just fronting. If I were to ask, where are your votes? I'm not talking in a theoretical sense. You want to talk, hard talk, where are your votes? What votes can you absolutely guarantee right now? They don't have that. They are all trading on the illusion of the civil rights movement and the pairing of the civil rights movement, hopefully with the memory of progressive whites, that they should do all they can in the spirit of solidarity. Those days never existed, but now they're definitely dead. This whole thing was done wrong and with very false ideas. And again, they're talking, but talk is talk. You have no backup. If I were to say, okay, let's talk about, if I were Biden and say, all right, you want the number two spot, why do you deserve it? Because I have a long history. Forget all of that. That does not matter. Why do you deserve it? Of what political value are you to me? Now, if you walk in with a nice little envelope and some sheets of paper on it, in it, that say, you can deliver, you guarantee that you can deliver X millions of votes, especially from the African-American and Latino communities. Now you're relevant. Let's have a relevant conversation. So far, you're talking trash. So far, you're asking me to do you a favor. And you're bringing nothing except this emotional connection you supposedly have and all the skills that you have. Politics doesn't run on skills. It runs on what you can absolutely guarantee. And it will not be forgotten that it was Clyburn, not Sharpton, that delivered the goods. Clyburn of South Carolina that delivered the goods. So I don't know what they're talking about, and I don't know what world they are inhabiting in which they believe that they're so important that they cannot be survived without. They're in for a good surprise. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Therese, how are you feeling?
Okay, how you doing?
Good. How you doing? I'm all right. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
All righty. Thank you.
Well, basically, I got to disagree with you. I think you give these people far too much intellectual, political acumen. I mean, what you're talking about was politics of the past, was an intelligent approach to politics, was looking at politics as what it is, which is really the determination of how the wealth of the nation is split up among different groups. Parties had platforms, parties had statutes, parties had definite goals, and the candidates that were selected must accommodate to the party's goals. You've got a cult of personality now, and it goes back to the Bernie campaign and how that was, in my opinion, that was never a movement. It was just a bunch of good, well-meaning people with good ideas who rallied around almost 80-year-old man. I mean, you can't expect change from octogenarians and 70 and 80-year-old people because they're
listen to you. Listen to you. Really? You can't expect change from a 70-year-old person?
Too accustomed to the system. Change involves uncomfortability. Change involves a certain amount of death of self and an ability to project into the future and to see what is best for the public at large. And when you're dealing with this older generation of politicians who have been locked in the Washington bubble for so many years and only concerned with getting reelected and not concerned with the real meaningful, substantial issues that we have to deal with. I mean, perfect example. This coronavirus is showing that we have a failed state. We have a state that now, 8 weeks into this thing, we still can't get everybody freely tested to establish a real baseline to find out where we're at. Korea had 10,000 people tested every day within the first 4 weeks. Venezuela. Old beat-up Venezuela, a political dictator, their death load was under 100. Vietnam, I can point out countless countries that handled this. This is, like Noam Chomsky said, this is an example of a failed state. We have a criminal enterprise in charge, and we have a bunch of clowns trying to defeat that criminal enterprise.
Do you put Sanders in that group?
Huh?
You put Sanders in that group?
I put Sanders squarely in that group because Sanders knew from what happened with Hillary that he wasn't going to get a break. And if he really wanted to do something, he would have went and become an independent. If he really wanted to do something, if he really wanted to establish a movement, if he really wasn't just caught up with wanting to be president and caught up in this political game that we've been in for the past 40-odd years. This is a sad joke. And I don't give any party, Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, they're all a bunch of clowns. This is a cult of personality and something we as people of good conscience, got to come together and get something going that's going to break this system, because this system is broken. It comes. I work with machines every day, boilers, engines, air conditioning equipment. There comes a time where you got to stop fixing it, and there comes a time you got to tell the customer, "Look, man, I can't fix this anymore. I can fix it. It's going to cost you money, but you need a new system." And that's where we're at. And until a large enough segment of the population begins to believe that, we're always going to be chasing our tail with this political game, because it's all a game. Nobody considers anything what politics really should be about, which at its basis form is the distribution of wealth among groups who need it.
But Ed, you're denying a very important reality here, and that is the change that you're talking about takes time. It doesn't happen overnight, no matter what you do. It takes time.
Yeah, but there's got to be a process towards it. We're not even moving towards it. I mean, everybody's paying lip service to issues, and because it's the flavor of the week or the flavor of the month, but we're not even moving towards it. There's no sincere movement. I mean, there's sparks here and there. As far as with workers protesting what was happening with this coronavirus, that's going to be, I feel, a light in the future. But there's nothing in this government, there's no one in this government that I can sit down and honestly point to and say, we're going to go with this person, or we're going to go with this person, or this person has to take the testicular fortitude to make this movement work and to do something for the real people. There's nobody. They're all plastic. They're all empty suits. I'm sorry. They are all empty suits. And I'm done. I listen to you, you know, because you're probably the only one I can get some decent news with Mr. Charles Otell. That was enlightening and really made me do my research. And I thank you for that. But this political stuff, man, I mean, it's a dead horse. You're dealing with a bunch of nags. You're dealing with a bunch of nags. They need to go to a glue factory. Get rid of these bums. It's time to break the system.
Oh, listen to you. You are on a rant today.
I'm sorry. It's time to break the system.
Thank you for your points of view, really. And I know people are listening. Even if they disagree, they can't disagree with the fact that you have thought out your position. That's it. Thanks, Ed, for calling in. Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
And I just want to say that, first of all, I wanted to actually comment on both things, but first I wanted to ask you, since you haven't received any messages from Bernie, and you wouldn't, because unless you're somebody who was, you know, actively working in the campaign, I don't know whether that you get direct emails, but I do. So I wanted to let you know, I just read this email I got yesterday from the Bernie Sanders campaign, because I think it will give you a lot of clarification about where the campaign is. So if you don't mind, I'd like to do that.
No, but I don't want a long text. We're running short on time. So to the best of your ability.
Okay, well, it said, on Monday, New York State Board of Elections made an end. Oh, God. My mother's calling at the same time. Can you believe it? All right. I just lost my text, so I'm just going to tell you basically what it says. That the campaign never ended. The campaign is suspended. And it suspended itself when they did not see a clear way to victory. However, it didn't end. And the reason why it was very important for us to continue to get delegates was because we wanted to be able to take that pressure to the floor during the convention to argue for progressive positions. And I appreciate people's frustration. I really do. But I think it's terrible to come on and to rag on somebody who has worked so hard to change things. This guy never wavered, never changed his position. And almost every category, at least in my box for being a lefty, a lot of it has been ticked off. And the things
but
that people
you misunderstand what is being said.
No, I do. I understand completely. And
I'm talking about how do you close out a system in such a way as to not give the impression, this is what we're talking about, the impression that has been left is that for all intents and purposes, this movement is dead. That's it.
Our revolution is a group of people that are working for Bernie Sanders that are still organized, that have meetings every Monday night. I am on those meetings.
Understand, a group of people is not embodying what it is the public at large regards as a movement. You had a movement. You were operating as a movement. You were talking about issues in terms of a movement. What is it now? Is it dead? Is it alive? Is it just a fragment that remains? And it is assuming the position of a movement that used to exist? We got to have some clarity here. And not leave it up to people to assume or to try to figure out, well, they're still around. No, you're a grown man. You're grown people running a grown operation. Handle it. This business, loosey-goosey is not going to work. If you have changed course or amended your course in any way, you have to let that be known. It shouldn't be left to you personally to convey what is happening with the Green Party or with this movement. That's the party's job. And I resent the idea that people think, I'm talking about in the party or in the movement itself, that folks will figure it out. They'll figure out what we're doing. And they'll come along the way they did when we started out. You haven't done the job of closing this out right. So you leave people in all kinds of states of confusion, in suspended animation. That is not a mature way to operate.
How do you do it? How would you do it if CNBC...
It has nothing to do with CNBC. It has to do with the movement.
It's impossible. And you know that we live in a world of this, of not a free press. This is a propaganda press. You of all people should know it.
You're giving excuses and explanations, and at no time have you conceded that they screwed up. And they continue to screw up, which imperils their future, if you really want to know about it. People want to see you do things the right way. You're not. You're scattered. You're scatterbrained. You're helter-skelter. That does not inspire confidence. Even if you were to lose, let's say, really badly, which you didn't, but even if you were to lose really badly, people would appreciate the fact that you still have your head on right and you recognize that leadership continues. You have the responsibility of leadership. This is your movement, your party, your concern. And you don't just walk away leaving people to figure out, well, is there something next? Is there a next here? No, that's what irresponsible people do. Even if you were to have lost miserably, but you show, even in losing, that you organized well. And you will continue in that vein because we have A, B, C, D things to accomplish. But you just shut down and you disappear. And nobody knows what's happening. And now it's my job to go and search for you, to find out what it is you have in mind? No. Absolutely not. This was your thing. You decided to start it up. you decided to appeal for public support, and you got it. You have an obligation, even if you quit, even if you lost, you have an obligation to finish the job well. He didn't do it. He isn't doing it. The party, the whole movement, they're not doing it. And we have to stop giving them reasons, excuses, all this elastic, and to presume that they will automatically be forgiven. No, you're doing a bad job. People need to say that. Correct it and move on. But don't tell me that this is the way it ought to be. And don't give me the news that, well, we're having great opposition from the media. So when has the media ever given encouragement to insurgent forces? Never. Never. The media is an establishment, a supporter of the establishment. We're not naive here. Let's grow up. I'm tired of these, you know, half-hearted efforts, and we give excuses and we give a lot of elastic for people to, well, you have to understand this and you have to understand that. No, what we have to understand is that there's no leadership at this time. And we won't entrust our concerns and our support to people who don't understand how to lead. You want to drop out of the race and call it a day? That's up to you. But you need to call the same people that you turn to get the thing ramped up. You need to assemble people and educate them as to what happened and where you are now, what you're thinking, and you need help and guidance with what's ahead. But they're not doing that. They're acting just like the Democrats. We know best what should be done. So you just wait until we let you know. Bad days for that are over. Oh, lucky. We have come to the end of our program today. Thank you so much. We continue tomorrow. I don't want to deprive anybody of input in our conversation. So thanks for listening in and for calling in and sharing your views. And let's meet up again tomorrow. Bye-bye.